Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McQuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au, or on our podcast a little bit later, welcome to you this morning as well. It's really good to have your company. An issue we've spoken about on the program before, but I guess every time I hear about it, I'm shocked all over again. So we're talking about down on the south coast of New South Wales, there are now cases of First Nations people being locked up for exercising their rights to cultural fishing. That's about 7 years after the New South Wales government announced it was legislating for Aboriginal cultural fishing, but those amendments have still yet to be implemented. So while the state government is dragging its feet, on the south coast of New South Wales, home to a multi-million dollar abalone industry, local mob are being hit with huge fines and even jail sentences for exercising these rights, a continuation of culture which has survived dispossession, stretching back thousands and thousands of years. Now, this is happening in a state which is supposed to be a world leader on land rights, which, although not perfect, has one of the best land rights schemes in the country. It's absolutely shocking to me. So today, this morning's guest is the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council's Councillor for the South Coast, Denny Chapman, who was elected to the State Land Council last year, and cultural fishing has been an issue close to his heart. So he joins me today to discuss this issue. Denny, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's good. First of all, can I just ask your mob in your country?
Yes, I'm a saltwater man from the Walbunja tribe of the Yuin Nation here on the south coast of New South Wales.
Right, and you were elected last year to the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council, but you've previously been on the council before, quite a couple of decades ago, weren't you? Can you tell me a little bit about land rights in New South Wales? Where do you see the current situation at now?
The last time I was with the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council was approximately 25 years ago, which is a lifetime, really. Over that time, I guess, in political terms, I've seen both the Labor Party and the Coalition come together on land rights, and I think the land rights here in New South Wales has reached a bipartisan political stage, which is really good. The government is still struggling with a number of issues, particularly land claims here in New South Wales, where we have a major backlog and they're still trying to resolve that. I think we have around about 50,000 claims that needs to be resolved.
Yeah, which is huge. I mean, how long will it take for them to resolve that at the current pace?
Well, I'm not too sure. We've been pushing the government to resolve these matters because it's vital to our economic future and our survival. We need to get back as much land as we can, and then we need to figure out how we're going to develop that for our economic future. So. The government is really struggling trying to resolve these matters, and we're pushing them to try and resolve it.
When you think of land rights, is sea rights ultimately included in that sort of umbrella term of land rights for you?
For me, our rights are very important. With the Aboriginal Land Rights Act, never touched on sea rights, but I mean our view has always been sea rights and water rights is probably a bigger part of the land rights agenda than as big a part as the land itself.
Do you think that's something, I guess, you mentioned the bipartisanship between both parties in New South Wales. Is that something, I guess, that's recognised by the current government, that sea rights is integral to land rights for blackfellas?
Well, The land rights system, I think, has reached a bipartisan stage with both governments. I'm not sure. Well, I can tell you that water rights and fishing rights is being fought to the death here in New South Wales, to the point where we've still got a couple of young fellas that's being charged.
Right.
So down still... here at the moment.
Wow. Because how many prosecutions has there been, I guess? I know there's been quite a number of local mob who've been fined and locked up, prosecuted for just going out and exercising their cultural fishing rights.
Well, there has been since around about 1985 when the laws have changed here in New South Wales, particularly with abalone and lobster, which is our native food.
Yep.
It was around from 1985, all these prosecutions and all that stuff started to happen. But it wasn't over the last few years. We've had a couple of dedicated lawyers that have taken on cases down here in New South Wales and defended some young guys, which saw the fisheries and the New South Wales government withdraw from prosecutions when it became fairly clear that we had enough evidence to suggest that our native title rights in fishing would win the case.
So what actually happens? I mean, when I know that there are increasingly I've heard reports of, you know, young people sort of scared to go to the oceans now, scared to sort of go and fish. What's the situation on the ground? I mean, even though I guess there is that sort of legal alternative now, there's a lot of, there's more support. I mean, I guess the people who are handing out fines, I've heard that they pretty much just, you know, sit there and wait for blackfellas to go near the oceans, or it's they're very quick to hand out fines. Is that the case still?
Well, I'll give you an example. My two sons, over the years, have built up fines of around about $10,000. So they've had about $10,000 sitting the New South Wales government's waiting to retrieve that money. And that has basically ruined their lives.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, they can't get a licence without paying this money back. And they can't do a number of things, and they're not the only ones in this boat. My brother-in-law spent 18 months in jail for fishing.
God.
So you know, the effects on the effects of the prosecutions on people that has done cultural fishing has been quite devastating to our community.
Yeah.
And our families. So, you know, it's one of the things that we've been trying to convince the government that we need to resolve these matters and stop the prosecutions and stop the jails, because we want them to go and chase real criminals, you know?
Yeah, right.
We don't want our people going to jail and getting these massive fines that'll affect the rest of their lives just because they're practicing some of the stuff that they've been taught to do.
I guess what are your cultural background? What does it mean to you to be able to go out and exercise that right? And what does it mean to your sons as well to be able to go out to the ocean and fish that way?
Well, we were all taught that, you know, when I was a young guy. Growing up, we all thought it was fun for our dad and mum to take us out camping by the ocean and by the estuaries and taught us how to fish and how to dive. And it wasn't until in the later years when I sat down and thought about it, they were teaching us how to survive.
Mm.
And that was the source of our food. At the time, we all thought it was fun, it was great, you know, being down there, but it had a much more serious message about it. It was how we survived, and that teachings and all that stuff has been handed down through me, my sons, and now on to my grandkids.
Do you find that because of the what has happened to your sons and the next generation who've been prosecuted for cultural fishing, that the next generation after them are sort of scared that there's been sort of a disruption in that cultural connection because of the prosecutions?
Well, yeah, well, we think that it's a form of genocide.
Mm.
If we can't practice our culture, then, you know, you tell me what it is.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing is, I mean, land rights is also talked about as an economic base as well. And I know I've spoken to Uncle Wally Stewart before on this program. He spoke about how the old people used to also use their fishing as a way to not just survive for themselves, but also sell and raise sort of an economic base as well. That's part of it, isn't it?
Sure. Yes, it certainly was, and probably still is.
Yeah. So when... keep going.
Oh, no, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, you mentioned that 1985 was when it sort of these prosecutions began building. Was there a reason why that happened?
Yeah, I think that's when the Asian markets opened up for abalone.
Yeah.
And the government decided to issue a share management type of regime in abalone and lobsters.
Right.
And sort of give them the people who held the licenses property rights. And that's when the prices and all that stuff were booming, and they saw and vilified Aboriginal people for going and catching, you know, our native food. And, you know, we got basically caught up in the crossfire and, you know, been prosecuted heavily for it. And the consequences, you know, are here on the ground.
And there's...
We've had one young bloke down here where the New South Wales Fisheries have taken him to court, prosecuted him, giving him, I think, 6 months in jail, and then tried to get a court order to prevent him from being within 250 yards or metres of any water controlled by DPI.
God almighty.
I mean, that is extraordinary when, you know, that young man has responsibilities to his kids to teach them to swim, teach them to dive. You know, his cultural responsibilities are very important, and water and fishing rights down this way is extremely important. And if that's not taught, you know, to the next generation, then we have missed out on our culture being passed on, and that'll be a tragedy for us. And, you know, if we didn't take measures that prevented the government from continuing the prosecutions, then that'd be the result.
That's absolutely horrendous. I also wonder, when you look at the multi-million-dollar abalone industry, you just think of the fact that you and mob, who have cared for this country for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, it's largely taken out that cultural responsibility to care for the oceans as well and manage those resources as well, is totally taken out of your hands. It's basically just watching sort of white greed gobble up the oceans, or greed, Western greed gobble up the oceans. Yous aren't actually able to care for that country anymore.
No, and you know, our responsibility for our country is taken very seriously by our people. And because it's been over-regulated, and our efforts to... we go down to the ocean and straight away we're under suspicion.
Yeah.
We've got people hiding in the bushes with cameras. You know, they get in there and they look like commandos, you know. They're dressed with trees hanging out of their heads and camouflage, and, you know, it's quite extraordinary what the lengths that the government has gone to stop Aboriginal people from practicing their culture. It's just quite amazing. You know, if you're reading this, you'd think of it as some kind of, you know, fantasy novel. It's true.
I can't, yeah. And it seems quite hypocritical to me because obviously in 2009, the New South Wales government tried to passed actually those amendments to recognise Aboriginal cultural fishing, but nothing has happened since, has it? I mean, how do you read into that, the fact that 7 years on, those amendments have not been, you know, enacted at all?
Well, yeah, we've, the Aboriginal Fishing Advisory Council, which I'm the chair of here in New South Wales, and they advise the minister, or we advise the minister on cultural fishing. We advised the minister around about 3 months ago that they should commence some cultural fishing without regulation.
Right.
So that would mean Aboriginal people would be able to go to the ocean, exercise their cultural rights without fear of being intimidated, prosecuted, or hunted off their country. That didn't go down too well with the department, because if they have they think that if Aboriginal people have an unregulated access to industry or to the ocean, then they wouldn't be able to manage it. So at the moment, the minister has called on the government or the bureaucracy to give him a report on what would be the consequences of an unregulated Aboriginal access to the ocean.
Oh, God.
And that report will be given to the government in the next couple of weeks, so we'll see how that goes.
That's actually phenomenal that they would think that that you know, unregulated access would result in sort of, I guess, blackfellas going in there mismanaging the waters that they've looked after for so long. It's actually really offensive, the idea that they have to commission a report into this that they might just sit on again if it doesn't sort of back what they want to say or what they want to see.
Yes, it's very offensive. But we'll see how they go. I mean, you know, they have to do something. And as I mentioned before, we've had a couple of good lawyers and a couple of good cases down here where our people have been attempted to be prosecuted and have gone to court, and we've defended those through a couple of good lawyers around the place. One is Tony McAvoy QC, an Aboriginal lawyer from Sydney. He's fought the case down here on a pro bono basis. And we got it to the point where the government had to withdraw the charges and shut the court case down because we were on the verge of getting our native title rights recognised here in waters on the south coast, and the government couldn't afford to do that.
Yeah, it could have set a precedent for them, which would have been quite costly, wouldn't it have?
Well, if we've got an unvetted access to the ocean, then they can't manage the resource.
Yeah, right.
So they had to withdraw. But we've got them to the point now where fisheries no longer prosecute us. It's the police that's doing it.
Right. So they've passed it into the police.
We've been working with the police to try and say to them, look, you know, we'll defend our rights vigorously using Section 211 of the Native Title Act to defend our rights to fish.
Do you find the police are a lot easier to negotiate with than the fisheries?
No.
Oh, right, it's a similar thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's out of the pan into the fire, you know. It's they're both as bad as one another. You know, if they continue to prosecute, then I can't see the difference.
after that, you did mention the recent court case, which Tony McAvoy was involved in. I was reading that after that court case, the fisheries had actually softened their view towards prosecuting Ewan Mobb down there. But you were talking about that there are a couple of fellas on charges just at the start of this conversation. So has that sort of reversed, that they're sort of changing their mind, they're charging more people after that, softened after the court case?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. The New South Wales Fisheries hasn't charged these two young men. It's the New South Wales Police who have charged them. But, you know, I can't see the difference. They're both the government.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, it's a subtle difference when you're talking to, you know, fisheries would probably say, well, we're not charging anyone.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is people are still being threatened and their liberty is still being at risk because they're being charged and dragged off to court for practicing what their grandfathers and their fathers have taught them to do.
The other issue as well is I think there was only two Aboriginal fishermen who actually held commercial licences down there, weren't there? I mean, even for an economic basis, blackfellas find it hard to get commercial licences to support themselves economically, whereas obviously other big fishing companies can go in and get those licences. Is that another problem that you're facing, that you're unable to form that economic basis as well?
Well, it's probably one of the other advices that the Aboriginal Fishing Advisory Council provides to the minister. I mean, down here on the south coast, for example, we've got two Aboriginal families who've got beach hauling fishing enterprises. Their businesses are at risk now because the New South Wales government have just implemented a structural adjustment scheme, which means they've changed the fisheries into a share management fisheries. And you have to be a businessman now and a fisherman second. Because of the way that the government has implemented their new structural adjustment scheme.
Yeah, right.
And that's very difficult for Aboriginal people down here who have limited skills in businesses and in managing share management fisheries.
Yeah.
And how that operates. The other big issue down here is that they're taking water away from our professional fishermen. They've implemented marine parks down here where Aboriginal people over the years have fished. And now they've taken all of that water away from them and they've just got a limited amount of water which they can fish, and they can't fish on public holidays and long weekends. So they're slowly being boxed in to the point where you know, they'll probably regulate them out of the business.
Right.
If the government don't take heed for this, so that'll be you know, around about, and it's all over New South Wales. That'll be you know, generations and generations of fishermen. Well, you know, we've always been fishermen. I mean, you know, we'll be struck out of the industry unless the government doesn't take proper heed to their policies.
Yeah, absolutely disgraceful. Have you found that because you're now obviously on the Newswalk board that you've had a lot more, I guess, success in being able to negotiate with government? I know you were previously also on the Aboriginal Fisheries Council, the Fishing Council as well, but being part of Newswalk, has that helped you in being able to negotiate on a better foot with government?
Well, look, I've got to say, over the past 10 to 15 years, the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council and the New South Wales Native Title Services have been at one And they have very strongly supported our fishing rights agenda. And they will continue to do that. So the two most powerful organisations here in New South Wales have continually pushed and pushed and pushed for our rights to be recognised. But like I said, this is we're starting to get a little bit of traction now, but we're only getting traction because our legal position has changed.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we've defended our young men's rights to go and fish using Section 211 of the Native Title Act, which gives us a powerful argument to suggest that we have an unfettered, unlimited access to the ocean for our native title rights, and that that has brought a lot of fear to the government. So they're now trying to figure out how they can implement a cultural fishing regime and still have a management scheme in place that will, you know, preserve the fish. And that's where we've been saying to them that Aboriginal people needs to be employed to ensure, you know, future generations have access to these fish.
Yeah, most definitely. And we're talking about communities that do have high levels of unemployment where there are a lot of problems facing youth particularly as well, isn't there? How could this actually help change that situation, could help give jobs to youth, could help sort of turn their lives around?
Well, you know, if these young men were given their right of access, and that right has been turned into get a commercial access to industry, then that will resolve prosecutions, it will resolve some of the employment issues and all that stuff down here. It'll take pressure off the courts, but we'll, it'll be good for everyone, and we've been trying to convince the government that this is a win-win situation, and,
yep.
You know, they've fought us all the way to where we are at the moment, and, you know, our young people's just sitting back waiting so that they can have access, and they can have a limited access to the commercial fishing rights. And I think that's where we're heading. It's certainly the advice that the Aboriginal Fishing Advisory Council, New South Wales Land Council, and Native Title are trying to advise the government and push the government in that direction.
Yeah, I hope that the situation does change, and I really appreciate you joining me on the program this morning. It's something that we'll also continue following as well, because I think it's quite outrageous from where we're sitting up in Queensland as well. And thank you so much for joining us this morning, Danny. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for that. That was Danny Chapman, who is the councillor for the South Coast, the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council. And we were talking about an issue that he has been following for a very long time, actually. He was talking about in 1985 when sort of the abalone industry began to kick off down on the south coast of New South Wales, is when blackfellas sort of gradually began losing their rights to cultural fishing. And the Yuin Nation, which he was talking about, has a really strong connection to the ocean. And I think Tony McAvoy, who is a lawyer who's been working for them pro bono in trying to reverse this through the courts and trying to protect them through the courts, they actually have a few stories. I remember we had an interview last year about the symbiotic relationship they had with killer whales in particular, and how they would work with the ocean, work with killer whales to bring in fish and other sort of species that they could it as well. So they've got this really strong innate connection with the land. And I think Tony McElroy was saying that anywhere in the country, they have one of the strongest cases for native title cases for their connection to the sea. So it's a really interesting issue. And we were talking to Denny Chapman, particularly about his personal experiences. His two sons have racked up nearly $10,000 in fines just for cultural fishing. His brother-in-law has been to jail for 18 months for cultural fishing. It has a really destructive impact, these prosecutions, on their lives. And he was talking about how some of the fisheries mob just hide in the bushes and wait for blackfellas to go near the oceans in order to nab them while they're exercising these cultural rights. It's absolutely outrageous. The other interesting thing I think about the story is that in New South Wales, I guess there's a perception all over the country that Koori's down there don't have their culture, or their culture has been ruptured, but it really hasn't. They still have this long continuing culture along the south coast, and unfortunately it's because of the actions, modern day actions of government. I think it's Mr. Chapman was sort of comparing it to a modern day form of genocide. I mean, it's a modern day form of dispossession, because they're basically cordoning off their access to their cultural rights, even, you know, 200 years since invasion. I think it's absolutely disgraceful. And it's one that we'll continue following on this program as it progresses. So we might just go to a song, Christine Arnoux, Come Home, and we'll be back. You're listening to Let's Talk.